It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have ongoing discussions on what homelessness is like in Wisconsin, and we turn to Superior. Millie Roundsville is CEO of Northwest Wisconsin Community Services Agency, offering programs to prevent and respond to homelessness in the counties of Douglas, Bayfield, Ashland, Iron, and Price in the northernmost reaches of our state. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question or add comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Millie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Lay out some of the issues you see. What are the greatest challenges facing the homeless population in northern Wisconsin?
I think our greatest challenge is lack of shelter space. We're very proud of our new project in Ashland. Previous to this, we had not had a shelter option at all. But I think the continued overall request for services, coupled with our lack of affordable housing options, we just continue to have requests for services and just trying to explore additional programs or services that we can try to offer to both prevent homelessness. And if somebody is homeless, make that episode as quickly as possible.
You know, we hear about this shortage of workforce housing, the shortage of low-income housing. How is this housing crunch affecting northern Wisconsin? What do you see?
I see it affecting in all aspects. Obviously, it's infecting our employers, being able to recruit employees, keep employees in communities. It affects the lower-income populations, particularly those on a fixed income that aren't able to afford market rent. So I guess it affects both ends of the spectrum and everything in between.
You know, when I think of northern Wisconsin, I often turn to tourism. I think about the tourism economy, and I wonder, how does that affect access to affordable housing?
Obviously, Airbnbs do have some impact on the overall housing availability, as well as colleges' lack of new construction. But also with the tourism industry, the need for employees is huge. Many businesses have had to cut hours, reduce hours, maybe even close some days due to lack of employees. Of course, and for the employee side, the lower incomes that we have here in Wisconsin, especially related to the minimum wage and the number of hours you need to work in order to be able to afford that apartment set available.
Where are unhoused people typically wanting to live?
Our experience has been traditionally either in the city of Superior or the city of Ashland. That's obviously for a variety of reasons. Within our service area, that's really the only two areas that have somewhat of a transit system, hospitals, service providers, but most cases, those are where individuals we're working with tend to try to access housing.
But there needs to be a transportation network. I think what I'm hearing you say, is the working homeless population able to find transportation to and from work?
In some cases, obviously, we do have the BART system in Ashland. Our shelter facility there is a stop for the BART system. We have a faith-based partner that provides us with bus passes. So during normal business hours, that does work. Obviously, for persons that are working third shift or starting prior to that, that can be a barrier. Superior more recently has been redoing some of the transit lines. We get our service from the DTA in Duluth. One of those changes resulted in a whole section of our town that no longer has access. So transportation has been, you know, an ongoing struggle as well as the lack of affordable housing.
Turning to the minimum wage in Wisconsin, $7.25 an hour, what are you learning about the link between wages and homelessness?
What we have learned is in a lot of our programs, we operate between the two communities, you know, Ashland, for instance, and Superior, for instance. Superior does tend to have a higher income for those we're working with, and it's because they're in Minnesota. So they have that access to employment across the bridge, so to speak, where the starting wages, the minimum wage itself, is much higher than it is on our side of the state. Most of the shelter residents that we're working with, finding part-time or full-time employment, even at the $10 an hour, there's only going to be one unit available that's going to come up for rent, and there's going to be 50 applicants in an hour.
Oh, wow.
So that's a challenge.
50 applicants in an hour.
Yes.
Has it always been this way? When did it become so competitive?
Since the onset of the pandemic, I think part of it had to do with there was a lot of COVID relief, so there wasn't a lot of movement in the market. Obviously very important, right? Keeping people housed, we participated in the WERA program. But then after that, you know, a slow turnover of units. So we have, like I said, the shelter facilities are full. We have plenty of vouchers, you know, with our supportive housing programs, Section 8 programs. But when you only have a handful of units and you have those 50 applicants, that's difficult because you're also competing with the employers.
Millie Roundsville leads an agency that provides services to support and prevent homelessness in five northernmost Wisconsin counties. You can join in with your questions, your comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Millie, the Northwest Wisconsin Community Services Agency is part of the state's Poverty Fighting Network. And we talked with the organization's leader, Brad Paul, this week. And here's Paul talking about housing units needed in Wisconsin for low-income families.
There's 130,000 units that we would need to build in order to fill the demand for the extremely low-income household population in the state of Wisconsin. And the market isn't producing those kind of units. The solution really is federal, and this isn't unique to Wisconsin.
So the solution is really federal. Do you agree with that? What stands out?
I do completely agree with that. We have not had an increase in public housing units. We've had some small increases in private developments, but a lot of those private developments, most of the population that we're working with can't afford $2,000 a month for a one-bedroom apartment. For organizations such as ours, public housing, to be able to provide affordable housing, we really do need the assistance of the federal government to be able to provide that bricks and mortar to make those developments affordable.
Your agency offers a coordinated entry program in northern Wisconsin to basically assess people without housing and match them up with housing. And you say people are frustrated by the agency's coordinated entry system. What is going on there?
I think it's difficult. Coordinated entry was a system that was designed for HUD-based programs. The purpose is anytime a person presents as homeless, they connect with coordinated entry. As you said, they're assessed and they're put on a list. The barrier with that is it is a list, truly. And the order of that list changes every time you assess somebody. So it's frustrating for individuals because it's a list. It's not like public housing where eventually you come to the top or eventually there is a unit. So for individuals that are on that, we continue to make contact to see, you know, if they've found a housing solution or if they're still homeless. But the way the list goes up and down and the order changes, and the fact that some people are never going to be able to be served. That list is truly for HUD programs. It doesn't help with, you know, public housing, other subsidized housing. It's purely in response to a requirement to fill programs off of that coordinated entry list in the HUD world.
Sure, sure. How do you contact people? How do you keep up in touch, you know, with people experiencing homelessness who might be moving a lot from place to place, difficult to track down?
And we do. We maintain a full-time staff position, and all of that position does is assess people and then follow up on the list, keeping contact, whether it's email, phone, another person. We do have some partnerships. You know, we have an outreach person with our Superior Police Department, you know, that allow phone usage for that person to check in. If they're tenting, you know, of course, using our shelters, even if somebody's not housed, we do still allow them to do a little laundry, make a phone call, take a shower. But some of those cases, it is very difficult to keep track of somebody that is moving night by night in some cases.
Millie, is homelessness less visible in more sparsely populated areas? Is it less, like, right in front of you?
I think traditionally it has been. You know, a lot of times you're not seeing where the camps are. You know, maybe organizations such as ours, you know, railroads, businesses maybe that are located near them might have known where they were. Mm-hmm. But I do think, you know, people sleeping on sidewalks have become more prevalent in recent years. It was truly the presence of the homelessness in the community of Ashland that triggered the response from the city to form our task force that ultimately led to the shelter there.
Millie Ronsville heads up Northwest Wisconsin Community Services Agency. It's based in Superior, providing support for low-income residents in five northern Wisconsin counties. Call in with a question. You can share what's on your mind at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of ongoing conversations, we examine how to create safe, stable, and affordable homes in Wisconsin and prevent homelessness. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Millie Ronsville, who's CEO of Northwest Wisconsin Community Services Agency that's based in Superior, providing services in five northernmost Wisconsin counties. Millie, we heard from Ernest in Hayward who called in, and Ernest says state and local tax codes should be changed to make it more affordable to build low-income housing. What do you make of that?
I do. I think there's a lot of models that could be used. There's a kind of a recent movement with the land trust model, you know, using some of those maybe non-traditional or more emerging options for affordable housing. Some communities are even making use of accessory dwelling units, rooming houses, shared housing. I do think we need to get creative just based on the overall housing shortage and lack of affordability. To maybe it isn't just one solution, but perhaps a variety of solutions to try to create more affordable housing units.
Do you see those outside the box types of options starting to emerge in northern Wisconsin?
I do. There is a group actually that's been meeting in the Ashland and Bayfield County area. I've been a part of that group that's working on creating a land trust. Obviously, the goal of that to create affordable housing options for the community. I know Stevens Point has an effort. The Cooley region has a land trust. So I do know those efforts are existing across the state. Rooming houses, there's very few left in Superior. Ashland doesn't even have an ordinance for that. Or other shared housing options. Mm-hmm. People tend to think of shared housing and you tend to think of students, but that wouldn't have to be the case. It could be, you know, two individuals renting a two-bedroom house together that are unrelated and using that model. But based on lack of land, construction costs, there are a variety of things that do need to be done in all of our communities to try to increase housing. And as those developments exist, or, you know, even something like a senior development where maybe that senior would then move into that, which would then have their home available for a first-time home buyer, who would then use their previous unit for an affordable rental unit. But looking at the big picture on a variety of things that could be done to help ease and shift that market for everyone.
Almost a domino effect there. Your agency transformed a hotel into a shelter, and the city of Ashland approving $700,000 in state pandemic relief funds for the project. How is the shelter serving people who are unhoused?
The shelter has been phenomenal. That had been something in our strategic plan for 20 years. We've never had a shelter for singles and families in our rural four counties. The city of Ashland, if they weren't willing to partner with us, this never would have happened. We opened on day 90. So we acquired that facility, did some renovations, had half of the facility available, and opened to our first 10 families. Since then, we've completed a lot of necessary upgrades. We have 21 rooms available serving 21 households, computer lab, laundry facilities, but we served over 100 households in our first year. So if that's a demonstration of the need in our rural counties, that is huge. And 21 families. I mean, that's quite impressive just to be able to provide that type of sheltering capability in our rural areas.
21 families. And we're not talking about individuals here. These are family units. This is more than one person.
We do. We like that we, especially during the height of the pandemic, the facility itself was a former hotel. So with COVID and all the other things going on, everybody has a private bathroom, a private exit. So being able to take the, both families and signals when somebody presents has been wonderful. We're not limited to, we can only serve a certain population. As somebody presents, we're able to make that accommodation, and we like having that flexibility and that service available.
How did your agency secure a permit to operate a shelter out of a former hotel?
It was, I think, a little difficult. I think anytime there's a change of use process done in a community that relates to any sort of a connotation of affordable, subsidized, homeless, I think there's always some fear that comes up in a community. You know, maybe not so much stereotyping as much as sometimes just not familiar with how things are going to operate. We did have to go through the change of use process, both through zoning and through the council. I know there was a lot of unhappy concerns, but there was also some strong support, which ultimately resulted in us achieving that conditional use permit to create the shelter facility.
Did you encounter any not in my backyard tendencies there?
A lot, hours worth. You probably can go back and reread the testimony from both the zoning and the council level. But like I said, we have done a lot of things to try to put our neighbors at ease. I mean, we do have 24-hour staffing. We have a security camera system. It's not a drop-in shelter per se, where people change constantly. We are doing background checks. We have case management. So I think some of it is just an overall fear of what it would look like or what it would turn into, as opposed to now driving by, it doesn't look any different than it did when it operated as a hotel. There just isn't a hotel sign anymore.
Was there a learning curve to establish a shelter and redevelop a hotel property?
We had looked at this for many years, as I said, and partnering with the city, we'd actually looked at a couple different locations. We had the ability that we had come in ahead of time and done an inspection, so we knew what to expect. We had some additional funding sources to cover that rehab. Our organization has operated another shelter in Superior for many years. So we had a lot of the policies, the procedures, you know, those sort of things in place.
Those fundamentals.
It was a matter of getting through the acquisition process so we could actually start implementing those things.
Millie Ronsville leads an agency providing services to support and prevent homelessness in 5 northern Wisconsin counties. You can join the conversation. 800-642-1234. Call in with your questions and comments. Millie, you mentioned that your shelters are full. Are you turning people away?
Yes, unfortunately. And we don't have a strong system for hotel vouchers either. It is unfortunate that we do have, you know, individuals that are remaining unhoused. Some, of course, by their choice. You know, there is a population of people that just want to know where is it safe for me to put my tent, so to speak. We'll always, of course, allow those individual showers and things like that. But there are others that, not to their choice, are having to either couch surf, sleep in a car. But if the more we can create in our communities to make that shelter stay shorter, the more space we will free up to allow new families to be able to come through. But looking at things on a holistic level, we're also creating an 11-unit transitional housing program next to that shelter. So again, looking at all the services on a community level for all populations, that will help reduce the numbers that need things at that given point in time.
I want to key in here on safety. Our show recently visited a Milwaukee homeless shelter to talk with people experiencing homelessness. And one of our producers spoke with Shirley, who says being homeless is dangerous.
I feel like being out here on the streets when you're a woman is very, very dangerous. You have no help, nobody that will protect you.
Do you feel that there is a safety concern in northern Wisconsin with experiencing homelessness?
Very much so. I mean, obviously, there's a safety concerns that were just referenced related to being alone, potentially being a victim of a crime. There's also concerns about weather. I mean, we have 40 below wind chills up here on the lake, you know, 3 and 4 feet of snow that come in. So definitely exposure to the elements. We've had individuals come in, all their fingers and toes have been frostbitten. So definite safety concerns on a variety of levels.
Where do people go when they're turned away?
We do have a couple of options. Bad River, one of our tribal partners, does have a warming center that they'll be opening again for this winter season. Locally, we're working on, of course, you know, transportation options and that to ensure individuals can get there. We don't have any warming centers in Superior, but we do have one in Duluth. The city had used a lot of their pandemic resources to expand those options as well, unfortunately. But outside of those, it pretty much is, you know, maybe staying with somebody you don't know, staying in a car, you know, doubling up is always a safety concern as well.
Millie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your time and being able to talk about what we're experiencing up here.
Millie Roundsville is CEO of Northwest Wisconsin Community Services Agency, programs for low-income residents in 5 northernmost counties. Our show is producing a range of conversations about homelessness and housing insecurity, and you can find links to recent conversations, recent segments in this ongoing coverage. And most of all, you can share your program ideas on housing and on this issue. Please do connect with us at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.